Welcome to the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. Case reports of COVID-19 continue to be on a plateau in Illinois. There were nearly 2,300 confirmed cases announced yesterday and another 136 deaths. Meanwhile, clusters also continue to be identified in places where people live or work in tight quarters, like nursing homes and like meat processing plants. That last one is of particular interest to my first guest today, Illinois U.S. Senator Dick Durbin. He helped pay for college by working at a pork processing plant in East St. Louis. Durbin's in Washington this week, where the Senate is meeting, and that's where I connected with him earlier this morning.
All right, Brian, I have Senator Durbin on the line.
Okay.
Hi, Brian.
Good morning, Senator. How are you?
I'm fine. How you doing?
You know, it's a beautiful sunny day here in Springfield, so I can't really complain.
Good. A little chilly, I understand.
We had a wide-ranging conversation about meatpacking facilities, the fight over when and where to reopen businesses in Illinois, and the sexual assault allegations against presumptive Democratic presidential nominee Joe Biden. But first, we've known for some time now that people who are African-American are more likely to be afflicted and killed by the novel coronavirus. In Chicago, less than a third of the population is black, but they've accounted for 70% of the deaths from COVID-19. And now there are new reports that Latino communities are also seeing higher case totals. I began by asking Senator Durbin what he's doing to address these disparities.
I had this conversation with Governor Pritzker a few weeks ago. We were one of the first parts of America to really collect data on racial background when it came to these coronavirus infections and deaths. So what we're trying to do is to collect the data nationwide. There's more and more evidence that we're not unique, that this is a phenomenon which is really deadly for minority populations, especially African Americans and Hispanics. What we need to do, obviously, is to make sure that we have outreach in this area. I talked to Dr. Redfield with the Center for Disease Control yesterday. We need health workers in the neighborhoods who will reach out to people to make sure that they know what is available to help them, to make certain that they go see a doctor if they've reached a point where they need some help. There are a lot of ways to approach this, and we need some long-term solutions. But the immediate answer, I think, is a more intensive person-to-person effort in the neighborhoods affected.
As you know, there have also been significant clusters of cases of COVID-19 outbreaks in meatpacking or meat processing plants in Illinois, in towns like Rantoul and Monmouth and Joslin. Some have closed and reopened. I know you work summers at a pork processing plant in National City. You know what these places are like. Is it safe for Illinoisans to be returning to work at these plants?
I spent 12 months as a college student working my way through a packing plant, a Hunter Packing Company in East St. Louis, Illinois. So I saw it on the inside. It's hot, dirty, dangerous work. And it's reached the point where most of the people, or many of them, I should say, who are taking these jobs are immigrants. The Hispanic population, as well as Africans, coming into places like Beardstown and becoming a big part of the workforce. Well, now we're learning through hospital administrators in the area that they're seeing these COVID-19 infections increasing at these facilities and even deaths associated with it. So some of them had to close down. So many people were getting sick. And I've been talking to the owners of these plants about reopening and under what conditions. But it boils down to this. We worked then, and still people do, shoulder to shoulder, elbow to elbow, with a conveyor belt of meat or poultry coming right in front of you as fast as you can possibly react to it. It's just the nature of the workplace there. And secondly, it's a situation where many of those who work there, particularly those who are immigrants, live in group settings when they're not at work, travel all packed into the same car. Is just a natural breeding ground, I'm sorry to say, for this COVID-19 virus. So we talked, as I spoke to Dr. Redfield at CDC yesterday, one of the things we need to do is to make sure the plant itself tests employees before they come on the job to make sure they don't have a fever, to see if we can even have more testing. We also have to talk about some of their living conditions and alerting them to changes that need to be made.
So I know the Senate is, as I understand it, not working on another relief bill this week. But when that does happen, what is at the top of your list for the next federal move in this crisis?
Well, the job's not finished. You know, we set out and said initially, we're going to focus on unemployed Americans, and with 30 million of them or more, we certainly still have that responsibility. Secondly, we said we're going to do what we can to keep small businesses alive during this period of downturn. And so we gave them forgivable loans. Now, all of those efforts I've just described in unemployment as well as the SBA loans are set to expire around July 1st. It's really wishful thinking to believe that our economy is going to be back and we're going to be out of the woods by July 1st. So we've got to maintain our commitment in these areas to unemployed and their families, as well as to helping small businesses. That's not the end of the list by any means. Testing is the thing that I'd say is critical at this moment. We're now in a debate in Illinois. When are we going to get back to business as usual? The governor has set some standards based on medical advice that he's received. There's a big controversy and debate over whether those standards are the right ones. But everything that we do from this point forward depends on testing, testing, and more testing, so that people coming on the job, coming into the schoolhouse, showing up in different places, have been tested to show that they're not positive.
If you're just tuning in, this is The 21st. I'm Brian Mackey, and we're speaking with U.S. Senator Dick Durbin this morning. You know, you alluded a moment ago to the debate that's happening in Illinois about when and how to reopen. There has been growing resistance to Governor Pritzker's stay-at-home orders here, particularly in the less populous parts of downstate, where there have been fewer cases, or at least fewer, what would you say, test-confirmed cases. Do you think people have a point about reopening at least the more remote areas of Illinois?
I think they do, but let's be careful. In many areas, and you may have corrected yourself, whether there's been testing. Some of the rural areas have not shown a high incidence of infection because the question's never been asked. It's only when a person has advanced with the infection to the point where there's treatment that person enters into the records. But having said that, I think it's very clear that in urban areas like Chicago and New York, where there are more concentrated populations, we have a higher incidence of positive testing and death. So what the governor's suggested, and I think he's on the right track, is let's look at the state in terms of discrete regions and find out two things. First, what is the rate of infection and death? Is it increasing, flattened out, or decreasing? And we're looking for the downward slope, the decreasing. And secondly, what are the health resources that are available in each of these areas by way of hospitals and clinics and medical providers, ventilators, and the things that are essential? I think this is a tough call by the governor, but it's one that he's made based on medical advice, and that's what it should be.
We've seen in some states, as we're talking about reopening, offices and stores slowly reopening and demands from the government that workers stop taking unemployment, go back to work. But on the other hand, schools and daycare centers are remaining closed. And in fact, that's what Governor Pritzker's plan is here in Illinois. Offices and stores would reopen before schools and daycare centers, though we're not at that point yet. Is it right to demand parents go back to work without anywhere to send their kids?
That is a really tough situation. And I've heard from a lot of families who are concerned. First, they're worried about their kids falling behind in school. They have a new respect for teachers as they try to teach their kids at home. And they're in a predicament, too. If the kids don't go back to school or into daycare, how can they go back to work? And I think what the governor is trying to do is not to bring the children together into a circumstance where there might be an exchange of this infection from this virus. It's a hard call. There are no easy calls left on this. And I want to stick with him and make sure that we're doing this gradually and sensibly. But we've got to listen to the families, the working families, and the actual circumstances that they're facing.
And I also want to stay with Illinois for another moment, because I know last month, Illinois Senate President Don Harmon, State Senate President Don Harmon, wrote you asking for more than $40 billion for state and local government here. What do you think of his request?
Well, he sent the letter to us, and I talked to him personally afterwards. He's new to this position after Senator Cullerton's retirement, and I wish Don the best. It's a hard assignment on a good day, and our elected officials in the legislature have a particularly demanding agenda when it comes to this coronavirus. But I said to him, and I've said afterwards in other meetings, we shouldn't bring the word pension into this conversation. Every state, not every state, but most states have pension challenges. Certainly Illinois does. And for us to suggest that the Help government would be used for pension relief is going nowhere in Washington. In fact, it's going to be used against us. I asked the governor point blank when we had a bipartisan congressional delegation conference call, are you asking for money for pensions for Illinois from the federal government? And he said, no, we're asking for the revenues that we've lost because of this COVID virus. And I said to him, I think that needs to be clear. Because of President Harmon's letter, I think many people seize the whole question, wait a minute, the federal government shouldn't be stepping in and bailing out pension problems in states. That is not what Governor Pritzker is asking for. That's not what I'm asking for. But when you look at the downturn in sales tax revenues, for example, in our state, you can see we're going to fall short of what we need. And look at the increased demands in our state for state services. We've got to make sure that our request in Washington is very clear.
Yeah, and even without the pension component of that, it's still $30 billion that President Harmon was asking for. And I've seen Governor Pritzker suggesting state revenues could fall short anywhere from $6 to $7 billion in the next fiscal year, this year and next year. Is there any sort of federal help on that scale on the way for Illinois?
There's a possibility. We did $150 billion in the CARES Act, which was the initial legislation about 6 weeks ago, $2.2 trillion. So $150 billion for local units of government. And it went to the state, to the cities and counties of more than 500,000 population. It didn't help the others. I think we need to return to it. Now, Senator McConnell, the Republican leader in the Senate, suggested a couple of weeks ago that the state and local governments ought to declare bankruptcy. Well, it exploded in his face. It was not a very smart suggestion. In fact, it was deadly when you consider the salaries that are needed for the police and the fire and the first responders who are risking their lives in the midst of this coronavirus epidemic. So he's kind of backed off of that. I hope that we can put together a bipartisan coalition for helping state and local governments. They're part of the team that we need to be strong in America to get through this.
You're listening to The 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. We're speaking with Illinois U.S. Senator Dick Durbin. I also want to ask you, as we look ahead to the rest of this year, we are in an election year. And I wonder, are you comfortable running on a ticket with a presumptive presidential nominee who has been accused of sexual assault?
Well, I would say at this point, the accusation has been made and denied. And Joe Biden came forward and said, I want to turn loose all of my personnel records. If there's anything in there about this complainant, let the world see it. Be very public about it. But the archives said, we don't have that information. Then the Secretary of the Senate, where this event, apparently alleged event, may have taken place, said, we're not going to release this. We have our own restrictions. They're working that through at the court level. But what a different approach Joe Biden has taken to this. He didn't belittle his accuser. He didn't question whether she could raise this question. He instead said it didn't happen. It never happened. And I think the evidence ought to come up as best it can 27 years after the fact to show my side of the story. That's a much different approach than we've heard from others who face these accusations. So, yes, I'm supporting Joe Biden, and I believe it's time for a change here in Washington, and I hope he can lead us to change.
Do you believe Tara Reid?
You know, it's not a question of believing her at this point. I respect the right that she has to speak up, as we're learning with the Me Too movement and others. Many women who were victimized were frightened or for various reasons embarrassed and didn't come forward. We need to at least leave that opening for those who believe that they've been wronged to state their case on this. Whether she's right or wrong, true or false in her accusations, we may never know. But I think Joe Biden's approach to this has been as open as it can be, and he's denied the charges.
Last thing I want to ask you about, and it's on a slightly more personal note, you're back in Washington, D.C. now, but before that, I presume you were staying at home like most of us here in Springfield. I wonder, what has it been like to practice politics while in quarantine?
This is completely the opposite of my instincts as a political animal. A politician seeks crowds. We look for gatherings of people. We plow into these conversations with perfect strangers, shaking hands and getting to know people. I mean, that's just the nature of political discourse in America, and certainly I've been practicing it for a few years. So this is totally different. I will tell you that spending 5 weeks at home with my wife in Springfield, there were some very positive parts of that, too. I mean, we had a real neighborhood of activity. We had people walking around, waving to others, speaking from across the street, walking their dogs, riding their bikes, going into the park. I got to know the mailman a little better. I mean, these are things which just haven't happened in a long time. So as tough as it was to sit home day after day, there were some positive aspects to it.
How was your flight to D.C.?
It was a plain American Airlines flight, about 180 seats, and there were 11 passengers and 6 crew members, counting the pilot and co-pilot. Nobody on the plane, obviously. And you can understand why these airlines are losing money. We were able to sit spaced out for the hour-and-a-half flight. I called the attending physician and said, should I get in the car and drive 2 days, stay overnight somewhere, or get on this plane for an hour and a half? He said, slap your mask on and get on the plane. It's better.
Senator Dick Durbin is the senior U.S. Senator for the state of Illinois. Senator Durbin, thank you for taking the time to speak with us on the 21st.
Good talking to you too, Brian. Thanks.
More to come on the 21st after a short break. Stay with us.
The 21st is made possible in part by Busey. Whether you're just starting out or upgrading to your dream home, Busey can guide you every step of the way, because they know there's no place like home. Busey, fulfilling dreams since 1868.